Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans,
Part 2.
Now, as anyone who's ever eaten an ice cream on a sunny day will know, a lot of it ends up on your trousers and shoes. But imagine if you could collect that ice cream from your trousers and shoes, reform it, you'd have a bit of extra ice cream, wouldn't you? Mm. And that's what we've done for you with our banter. We've scraped it off the
We've yanked shoes, it out of the seagull's
yanked,
beak.
Yanked out of the seagull's.
We've wiped it off the toddler's chin.
Yeah.
We've scraped the seaside bins and we've reformed it into the shape of a funny foot. Put it on a stick. And now we're going to shove it into your ears.
Enjoy.
Now and again, I'll go for a Mr. Whippy with a flake and a classic 99, by all means. But yeah, my ice cream tastes were quite entrenched in the 80s. I haven't changed and won't change.
It's fixed, isn't it?
Yeah.
It does get fixed. I'm quite fixed with my ice cream choice as well.
Well, is it gelato? What do you guys do in the throbbing capital?
Yeah, it has to be a home-churned gelato. Ideally, it's been churned with the dying churn of an old gelato meister.
The final turn.
The final churn of a gelato master who's been churning, you know, since World War II in a small Sicilian village.
Seasoned with his final regretful tear.
Seasoned with his final regretful tear that he never...
I have wasted my life.
I should have married that American GI. or whatever it is. It'll be something to do with GIs. And ideally served up with a wafer delicately placed into it by one of his five beautiful daughters.
Of course.
In a glass dish that's so cold it's painful to the touch.
That's right.
And a spoon that is about 6 yards long.
And thinner than chopstick. Yeah. Incredibly hard to manipulate. But flavour-wise, I've got the same thing as Mike, I imagine, which is that I just always go for the same flavour, partly because it just feels the stakes are too high to risk something different. So for me, it's always one ball of chocolate and one ball of a fruity one.
Okay.
So often it'll be strawberry or raspberry or something, but that and a chocolate.
No, that's good. That's a good tactic.
Yeah, but I'll never deviate from that. And I always have it on a cone as well. I'm not messing around with this.
Have you ever been to Mary's Milk Bar in Edinburgh?
Oh, no, I don't think I have. I've heard of this place, though.
I don't think I have.
It is absolutely off the chain.
It's meant to be a sort of must-go-to stop, right?
Oh, my God. This year, I was in Edinburgh for a week, and I think I went every day.
And you, I'm imagining you more sort of going for the full Knickerbocker Glory sparklers, the works, yeah?
Little Trumper. Yeah. At the top. No, it's all cone based.
Okay.
But they do, what they do is you'll have two flavours. Mm-hmm. So you'll go for one like chocolate, like Henry says, and then a gorgonzola.
Ooh.
What? Are you joking? blue cheese.
Yeah. They've got like savoury flavours and they're really nice.
And you'll wang that in the same cone as a chocolate.
Yeah, you need to mix it up. Yeah. Or like passion fruit and ham. They don't do ham, but they have these kind of like slightly savoury.
I'll have a ham hock sorbet, please. Wow, you're out of control, Ben.
Oh, it's so. I mean, I'm so glad. If I lived in Edinburgh, I'd just go there every day. I think it's the best food in the world.
Ice cream.
This specific ice cream.
This specific one is the best version of it, though, yeah.
But I once heard from someone, who a very healthy person, that ice cream is the worst food for you that exists. But it's just, there's no possible way around it. There's no...
Surely not.
Because you think about it, it's sugar, cream, it's fat and sugar, isn't it? It's the two bad things in absolute maximum.
I did have to stop myself this year, or last year, I got into a real like Magnum thing where that was becoming a daily.
You love Magnums, don't you?
Yeah. And I had to sort of forcibly say no more Magnums for a while.
Just went cold turkey.
And then I'm back on them now because this week my favourite flavour of Magnum, white chocolate and cookie,
is back.
Was being sold for £1.80 in a pack in my local co-op.
To celebrate the Ides of March, which I think is when this well, episode is coming out on.
I was worried that the pricing augured the end of that range forever.
Oh, they're getting rid of them.
Yeah.
And you love an end of range binge, don't you? You love to buy up stuff that's
you love to fill
just
up,
on the verge
fill
of being
up the
condemned.
Chest freezer.
Yeah,
I bought 18.
You bought 18 individual Magnums?
Yes.
Bloody
but
hell.
In box, it's three in a box, so I got 18 altogether.
Wow.
I don't regret it.
Your burglary risk has just gone through the roof, Ben.
That is an absolute invitation.
That,
and they obviously
public.
Know that you're podcasting now, so they know you're probably not at home.
They can triangulate your signals.
They know you were at home now when this was made, so you're probably not at home now when it's being... you know what I mean? There's a good chance they'll be around there right now, Ben. Because where are you now? You don't know. You're definitely not here because you're here now.
Oh, God.
But where, you know what I mean? You're in all kinds of trouble.
But they will meet my Magnum Doberman. So I got home and I went straight up to my room with my computer in and went on the Magnum website to see whether they were discontinuing them. Mm-hmm. And it seems like they aren't.
Okay.
But I'm still going to keep a box as a kind of like... You know that Norwegian seed store where there's a seed of every kind of plant on Earth that's been kept underground and frozen?
For the restarting humanity situation.
Yeah. That's what I'm doing with these Magnums. I'm keeping a few as a kind of library.
Okay. So they can be shown to scientists.
They can reverse engineer the flavours.
And they can engineer new ones and make Magnum Park, which people can visit. Based on those original Magnums, they'll be able to see Magnums roaming. Yeah.
They'll be able to go on a sort of interactive tour of your small colon. And things.
That'd be nice.
Made as a kind of tunnel.
Because Magnum, the people at Magnum, a couple of months ago, just on overnight, without any fanfare, discontinued the ruby flavour.
What was that?
I don't actually know. It was pink chocolate.
Such a bad idea. You can tell it's a bad idea. I mean, it sounds awful.
Yeah, I don't think anyone ever ate one.
Ruby's a colour or a jewel. It's not even a food, is it? You can't have a ruby flavour anyway.
Yeah.
I wish
I had a one of those or a box of those just in... the freezer that I could have for like 10 years.
Someone does somewhere. There's a bunker that exists, surely.
They try these things out, don't they? And they'll try it out outside of, certainly outside of London, outside of the major metropolitan hubs. They try out these flavours, don't they?
Well, do they test them in the provinces first in case they're dangerous, you mean?
Well, exactly. Mm. Obviously, they have to counteract. They obviously have to factor in the fact that people in the provinces have much sturdier... Mm. constitutions and internal pipes.
Yeah.
Are you saying that Mike could digest a ruby?
I think he probably could.
But if those people do get any problems from an experiment, then, I mean, they're just going to have to shut the whole thing down, right? Discontinue the prototype, napalm the village. It's over.
Exactly. Yeah.
This never happened. Mm.
Basically, the way it works is, increasingly the way British, certainly British society is structured, is that... Well, there's London, and it's surrounded by London. The reason that the provinces are still allowed to exist is because they are a testing bed for various different products, flavours of biscuit, fruit, different types of petrol. And I remember I first realised this when I was on a school trip outside of London.
And that was it as the trip, wasn't it? I mean, before you go on a school trip in the provinces, it's good to go and see a Roman ruin or a castle. The view is literally just to see... Have a look at the outside of London through triple glazed, special reinforced armoured van.
That's right. We go
usually used for transporting Charles Bronson, that kind of thing.
Extremely dangerous prisoners and or toxic chemicals.
Yeah.
Or loo from neighbours.
That's right. So yes, we did a trip to out of London. London, as you probably don't know, is actually surrounded by a huge glass dome. It's a 15-foot deep plexiglass protective covering, which is only visible from the inside, which is why people from outside of London don't actually know it's there.
Yeah, and at night it's covered with a sort of massive tea cosy, isn't it? Keep it warm.
That's right, which if you're looking at it from the east, has a painting of Kent on it. If you're looking at it from the west, has a painting of Gloucestershire, and so on and so forth. But yes, I remember we first were allowed to penetrate the outer hull.
Hmm. How does Heathrow work?
It's a great question.
There's a giant Velux window at the top.
Giant Velux window.
In the mega cloche, or whatever it is.
That's right. Which is a huge expensive piece of engineering, which is funded by miniature Velux windows, which are sold to people with loft conversions. Yeah,
it's actually funded by the provinces, really.
That's right. Well, yeah, that's the irony.
I love a Velux window around these parts. I'm very excited about that sort of thing.
But so yes, we went to out of London, and we were allowed to sample some chocolate bars from a local shop, and they had these weird chocolate bars I'd never heard of. Didn't know what the hell they were, and we learned they were being tried out in the provinces.
No.
Yeah, I think so.
Was it a pepper army?
That was a great exercise in rebranding, wasn't it? What they were originally launched as a milk chocolate wafer bar.
Yeah, like we're having to supplement so much of this chocolate bar with illegal meat fats and hoof fragments. We might as well just call it a sausage. Flip it round.
I think, strictly speaking, they're not allowed to call it a sausage either.
No. It's a...
Things have come to a pretty pass when that's the case.
It's a semi-digestible baton. Isn't it?
It's a compressed animal matter baton.
No, I think that is true, isn't it? You do get odd chocolates and stuff.
But I thought, I mean, in previous editions of this very podcast, you've told us that things are tried out in your local garage.
But yeah, that does also happen in my local garage. That's a sort of black market thing,
isn't it?
It might be a black market thing.
Could it be, Henry, that everywhere you go, be it your local garage or a town outside of London, you assume the products are only there, but they are actually nationwide, if not worldwide?
Well, one of those chocolate bars on the school trip was called Spira. Did that become massive?
Yeah, Spira's
quite
big.
Yeah, Spira everywhere.
Yeah, big noise down Portsmouth way, sure. I loved a Spira.
It could.
It was mostly air.
Yeah.
But I loved it.
Another possibility is that it's not... It's me that's the person that's tested. So I'm seen as a sort of...
Mm.
You know what I mean? So wherever I go, shops are instantly stocked with strawberry chocolate digestives and weird stuff like that.
Maybe.
Which they've got in my garage at the moment.
Henry, can I apologise to you officially?
Yeah.
I'm just on the Spira Wikipedia page.
Yeah. Ooh.
The Spira was a milk chocolate product in the form of a hollow twisted spiral.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah.
Produced by Cadbury. There were two spiral fingers in each pack. And the brand was initially only available in the southwest and northwest of England.
Wow. Oh, come to Papa.
Before being rolled out across the country.
Come to Papa. Give Papa a big chocolatey hug. Vindication. Wow, what a lovely feeling. Yeah, there you go.
The Spira was first tested in the Granada television region.
That's fascinating. So the northwest and then the southwest are felt to be the most expendable areas of the UK, according to Cadbury's.
And I think it may have been because I did do a school trip to Cornwall. I remember, that'd be southwest, wouldn't it? Yeah. So it might have been that one.
Well.
And obviously, Spira's caught on.
Yes, and then they were discontinued in June 2005.
Sad day.
Because we'd moved on.
Yeah.
We'd moved on as a country, I think.
But it does feel like it's worth sort of storing these things, isn't it? In case there's, at some point in the future, they get discontinued and then you can...
Well, I mean, I fancy a Spira right now. It would have been worth it for that.
I'd love a Spira right now. And if you could go online, what could you charge for a Spira right now? You know, it's the kind of thing that billionaires would get into probably, isn't it?
Yes.
Either create your own space race or try and track down a Spira.
It could be the new wine cellar, couldn't it? The discontinued chocolate cellar.
Yeah.
Take guests down to dusty old wrappers of Cadbury Spira for special occasions.
Yeah.
And Magnum Ruby. Mm. There are people online I've become aware of who feel that the scent of Old Spice changed at some point in the 90s. Really? And so hunt down pre-1995 bottles of Old Spice, which you can buy on eBay.
Really?
For lots of money.
Because the old Spice was so alluring.
Exactly. Yeah.
That is the smell of the 70s. By the way, one thing I can tell you about Old Spice is, at one point, a few years ago, we had a lodger briefly, and our lodger was he was quite close to retirement age, but he lived outside of London and had a job in the week sometimes, so he'd come in.
He'd pay you in spiras.
And he, every morning, he'd be in a bedroom downstairs. Every morning, he'd get up really, really early, sort of 6 or something. He'd be, just before leaving the house at 6:30 a.m., he would just do 2 little sprays onto himself of Old Spice, which would instantly fill the entire flat for the next sort of week. Instantly, the whole place. It was incredible. A lot of Old Spice. It was just truly, truly pungent.
Look at this.
Whoa.
Ben. Hang on, is that the Old Spice milk drink? Is that the Old Spice Yakult crossover?
Ben's brandishing a bottle as we speak.
Ben's brandishing a small white bottle of Old Spice.
I'm going to put some on.
I don't think I've even seen a bottle of Old Spice anywhere in a shop for years.
No, they've got advertising campaign at the moment. They're trying to reinvent themselves in some way. Yeah,
retro chic.
They're doing retro chic,
but in smell.
And it's that sort of 70s male sort of. I think they're having fun with the sort of 70s manliness kind of vibe.
Oh, it smells great.
Obviously, it's pure Ben.
Oh, but Ben, you've undermined yourself there. You just put it on your bottom of your wrist.
Yeah,
come on, mate.
What am I meant to do?
Old Spice.
Spray it into your.
It's about the epitome of manhood, isn't it?
It's supposed to go armpits,
yeah,
crack
straight down the back of your throat and under your balls. That's it. You can put a delicate dab on the base of your hand, and then no, come on, Ben.
I should be gargling it.
Exactly.
Well, how would you describe the smell, Ben? Woody,
hearty,
spicy,
old, musky.
Farage.
Oh, okay.
Pure Farage. Whenever I've had, bought scents or aftershaves or even shower gels for myself or for Christmas presents and stuff, there's always the sort of, there's a sort of gendering of smells that happens in shops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is that male smells are always woody, earthy.
Leather.
Spicy.
Lamb chops.
Lamb chops. Meaty. Mm-hmm.
Castrol GTX.
Petroli. kind of cinnamony, earth, mud, wood, bark, woody, dog leg,
yep.
Doggy.
Burnt hair.
Smoking dog.
Dog with a ciggy on the go. old World War II helmet. Yeah. and then the female smells are always citrus. Fruity, citrus, clean, citrus. And then man is earth, dark, wood.
Decay.
Spice. Turds. Old turds.
Turds of the world.
Neglected service station toilet.
And then on the female ones be like, immaculately well-maintained service station toilet.
On the day before its public opening.
In Switzerland.
So it's only been tested, but it's only been used by the boffins who designed it.
Yeah, it's been maybe a little bit of Alpine breeze has gone through there. That's it.
Yeah. And one of the boffins let his son use it, who was on a visit work with your dad day. And he is 17, so. Sorry about that.
But it was just for number ones.
Which is what he calls turds.
We've had a couple of emails in recent times with people saying, oh, you haven't picked mine yet. I sent it in ages ago. That's not how it works.
Yeah. The bean, come on, guys. It's the bean machine.
Don't try and... The bean machine doesn't use human logic, does it, Ben?
Well, no, it's completely random. But I think people think that we picked them, but we don't. It's random. We just put them all in a big... Shall I blow the gaff on the bean machine?
I don't think they're ready for that. And I don't think people would really believe you on how the technology actually works.
Also, there may be people who are under 18 listening. It's too unspeakable,
right.
Ben. Come on.
It's an Excel spreadsheet that I keep on my penis.
And you have to tattoo in the different, as the data changes, you have to re-tattoo in the little holes, don't you?
Hugely painful. Anyway, so it is totally random. So if yours hasn't come up yet, you have to blame the fickle winds, okay?
Yeah. And obviously, and also, don't write in bollocking us that true randomness is impossible. We know it's impossible. So it actually isn't random. Carry on.
Uh-oh.
Thank you.
It has the appearance,
from Science Corner.
has the appearance of randomness. It has the appearance of a random selection of dots. But obviously, the further you pull back from any list or any collection of dots, eventually you'll see a pattern. And in this case, it'll probably be of a naked Ben in a sort of squatting pose, won't it?
And to any university vice chancellors listening, Henry is open to the idea of an honorary doctorate.
Absolutely. A deanship.
Also,
those graduation speeches.
Doesn't have to be honorary either, necessarily. I'd go full doctorate.
Doctor of randomness, Henry Packer.
It's long been my understanding in terms of how academia works that literally anyone can do a PhD. I would say with me, cut out the middleman. Let's not bother actually having me write the dissertation. Mm-hmm. I don't want to write it.
No one wants to supervise that.
Just give me the PhD.
No one's mental health is robust enough to supervise you over a three-year period writing a single thesis.
So cut out. Exactly. So go straight to the
straight to the gongs.
There must be PhD people, right? I don't know much about PhDs, but there must be people who write them in the last 2 weeks, right?
I think mostly get written in the last 2 weeks. But the reason I say anyone can write a PhD is because, by definition, the PhD has to be on a topic that has not been written about before. Ergo, it's unprecedented. Ergo, it cannot be proven to be fallacious. Ergo, you get the framed thing, you get the framed bit of paper, you get the conical hat, you get the selection of lengths of ceremonial rope,
the sword, the 13-foot cigar,
and the golden goat. Golden goat and access to night barging on the Grand Union. And tell you what, those night barge sessions are crazy dull.
To all of our PhD level listeners listening, our official take on PhDs is that they are not worth the paper they're written on. Is that what you're saying, Henry?
It depends what kind of paper, but assuming it's just standard printer paper. Then yes.
I think it's potentially quite a load-bearing strut of our audience that we're chiselling away at right now.
Sorry, okay, I take that back. Obviously that's not true. It's very hard.
PhD stands for pretty hard degree.
Mm-hmm. That's true. It's correct that it is that. Yeah, no, I'm just having a laugh. No, I suppose it's just the fact that, because it has to be a new topic, doesn't it?
I do think sometimes I have met people in my life who are doing a PhD and ask them what it's about, and then I do think, you are having a laugh, though, aren't you?
While the NHS is on its knees and they're funding this, are they?
How would the modern wasp operate if presented with a tiny little T-cell?
Can it learn to put the milk in first? That's the question.
And if not, why not? And if so, why so?
Your null hypothesis is it prefers lemon. Is that what you're saying?
Are you saying it likes a milky Earl Grey? Or it might like a milky Earl Grey? And how would that contrast with bumblebee etiquettes? But the thing is, that's the point, is that PhDs have to be really obscure because it has to be something that hasn't been written about before, I think. Has to be really abstruse. But normally, Ben, it's a mixture of, when you meet someone who's having a PhD, it's a mixture of, are you having a laugh? And if you are having a laugh, why is it that you're coming across as so very, very unhappy? Because they'll be propping up the bar, going, oh, I've been bloody writing about these wasps for 7 years now. I'm literally only halfway through the introduction. I can't. It's impossible. I can't. isn't it? They go on forever, don't they?
Yeah, still Marjorie's being really supportive, and she says she doesn't mind just carrying on working and funding me through it. That's great. She does mind. She does mind. She's had enough.
She so minds. Yeah.
She needs a holiday, mate. She's been working like a slave for 7 years on the trot.
Yeah. House is full of dead wasps. There's too many to... you can't hoover that many wasps. It's impossible.
Well, you've been told especially not to hoover them. Marjorie's told you, well, no, can't use it. I have to hoover up these wasps because they're dated.
You have to start again. Yeah. You have to start the 7 years again. Good luck to any PhD candidates listening.
Also,
good luck with your Viva. Is that a thing?
Your Viva.
Good luck.
Viva.
Yeah.
That's when you have to explain yourself to some other people.
Yeah, but they've also got PhD, so I think you're okay. They get the scene.
That's financial support you get when you finish. They give you a Viva.
Oh, hello.
Yeah. That'll get cut. Little bit of advice for PhD people. It's basically because I had to write a dissertation at university, same sort of thing. Basically, you write the introduction. Say what you're going to say. Say it, then say what you've said. So introduction, say what you're going to say. Middle section, say the actual thing, and then at the end, just repeat what you said. But
I'd probably write it rather than say it.
Sorry. I obviously dictated my dissertation at university.
From a chaise long.
Just whispered into the ear of an amanuensis.
Exactly. What's that?
Amanuensis.
Yeah.
That's your person who paces around the chaise long taking down the notes of, Barbara Cartland or whoever.
As if I didn't know
Henry
that.
Henry Packer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'd be that person who keeps sending you invoices because you still haven't paid him.
I thought he was a spelling mistake. What are we talking about again?
Well, what I'm thinking about is what your thesis was.
Oh, you don't want to know. When I was doing my dissertation at university, it was the early years of word processing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a computer room, there's all that kind of stuff, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the computer was like as big as the room, right?
The computer was the room. You had to walk in. You had to open the door, get into the computer.
Yeah.
And inside there were lab coated American men wearing 1950s glasses and smoking, walking around with clipboards.
The room was kept at minus 30 degrees Celsius.
It had to be kept at minus 30 degrees Celsius at all times. It was haunted. There was all sorts going on in there.
But you could play Abe's Odyssey on it.
all the way to level 7, my friend. But no, I remember because I was so last minute, I was trying to assemble my dissertation in the computer room. I shouldn't be proud of this, but I was the last person in the whole university to send it to get my dissertation in. I had to cycle it in on a bicycle that was too small for me and the wrong shape. Which I'd bought at a police auction.
Was it? Was it the shape of a toaster? Was it a toaster?
I think.
I'm imagining a child strike.
Mm.
It was like a child strike. It was sort of the shape of a Soviet child with rickets. it was a sort of weird Soviet looking bicycle that just wasn't the right shape for me. I don't know if it may have been an early prototype for a bicycle. I bought it at a police auction. Anyway, my thinking being that police wouldn't rip me off because that's the opposite of what the police are supposed to do. It turns out but they did because you only had a certain amount of minutes to walk around and choose your bike, and then you're in the thick of the auction. It was like £5. No, £7 over here. I've got £7.50 over here. I've got £9 over there. I was caught up in the whole thing. There were people getting in. People. Doing international phone bids from Singapore. £12.50 for the rally.
Next up, the Siberian prototype of a bike. any bids?
Bearing in mind, it's a display prototype. It's not.
It's the rally hopper.
It's a rally hopper. It is not fit for perambulation. Just make that clear. It is not fit for preambulation or perambulation or any of their ambulation.
The pedals are razor sharp, I should warn you. Absolutely razor sharp pedals.
And we should make this clear, you could not deliver a PhD on this machine. You could not deliver a PhD.
The severed hands of the designer of the bicycle are fixed to the handles. They cannot be removed. They are fixed with rigor mortis. They cannot be removed. I ended up buying this. Anyway, so I had to cycle my dissertation in, last one in the university. But what happened was I had this absolute panic, right? So this was the culmination of months of work. I was in the computer. I hadn't worked out what my introduction or my conclusion was, but I knew that they had to be subtly different. Otherwise, people could question the point of the essay. And I got to a point where, I don't know if either of you ever have this, where it happens to me every so often, where I'm in the middle of a logistical crisis that is so extreme, I reach a sort of point of brain blank, where it's like, right, I'm simply, I sort of stop, my brain goes, too much, meh. And I feel like I'm in front of a kind of spinning white, sort of creamy. I'm just in a sort of creamy space. Do you ever get that?
You're in the panic churn. Yeah.
I'm in the panic churn. And I think actually, weirdly, it's actually the same sort of emotion a cow is probably feeling just before it gets milked. Which is... But there was no one on hand offering to milk me. The only way I could relieve my situation was by getting this dissertation in. So I had to finish it. But basically, as I was going through my essay, I was cutting and pasting last bits, trying to work out what the point of the whole thing had been. And I realised that my introduction, my conclusion were literally exactly the same paragraph. I'd copied and pasted it on top of the previous one. My entire essay was pointless. And I think what I had to do was just I had to lop out the conclusion and just sort of shove it in somewhere quite randomly in the middle and hope no one noticed. But the main thing was, the main thing I sort of knew was I can hit the word count. As long as you can hit the word count, Henry. That was all I had to cling to by the end, was just hitting the word count. Anyway, sorry. Sorry for going on about that.
I had the choice of doing a dissertation or doing a 20-week course about the Spanish Civil War. And I chose the latter.
Yeah, I'd have done that. That's easy. That's a no-brainer, isn't it?
It was great. And my teacher was a man called, I can't remember his name, but he was a professor who was a sort of Scouser, very left-wing Scouser. Mm-hmm. And his hatred for Franco was so raw and huge that every time he mentioned him, which was quite a lot, he would just be like, he'd spit his name out and be like, Franco, what a fucking cock.
I do a very similar thing, but about Franco Manca. just because, as we've discussed before, just because of the paucity of the toppings. Sorry.
And you're volunteering to fight against the sourdough base.
I'll be on the front.
You're in the international brigades, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Lousing mortars of tomato sauce.
It's what Orwell would have been doing if he'd still been alive.
Yeah, I've got a very vivid memory of a lecture about the Spanish Civil War finishing with him saying, and as for Franco, I wouldn't piss on him to put him out if he was on fire. And then we all put our things in our bags and left. Just hated him. Quite rightly as well, but, you know.
He is fit. I mean, it's the right position to take on Franco, probably, I suppose.
No, probably about it, Henry. Yeah, bad guy. Yeah.
Notorious dickwad.
So did he separate all the different historical figures into to people he would piss on or wouldn't piss on, or to what degree he would piss on them?
He would piss on them. Now, hopefully you're listening to this recording as a result of having signed up on our Patreon. But of course, we do know there is a thriving pirate three-bean salad grey market out there. People selling counterfeit episodes of three-bean salad. Mm-hmm. They record them. They'll often go into a cinema, play the podcast, and then film it with a camcorder.
That's right.
And then put that on DVD, which they'll then sell in pubs.
There's some tribute act recordings as well, aren't there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sort of Lyft music. Well, for Lyft podcasts, for Lyfts that use podcasts rather than music, it's cheaper if they, you know, if they have a supermarket chain or a
things. It's copyright free if they slightly warm up the banter above lukewarm, isn't it? So they can't prove that it's exactly the same.
Yeah,
so
which we know our listeners don't like.
No,
they like it. Tepid.
They like it.
But max.
Bang on Luke.
Bang on Luke.
So hopefully you are listening to the official release, because obviously if you've got a pirated one, sometimes it, it won't be that, you know, as you say, it won't be quite the same as the one we put out. It'll be, if anything, better sometimes than actually.
Almost generally better, be funnier, more informative.
And that calls into question the whole project, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And those people who do that are pirates. And we had an episode about pirates, and we talked about pirates at some length. So here we go. Here's some extra bits about pirates.
Every fibre of my being is just trying to stop myself from making the pirate sound, which I think we're going to have to not make, aren't we? Or lean into it.
Pirate sound?
Yeah.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
The pirate chant. The pirate...
chant?
Well, the pirate's exclamation.
There's international talk like a pirate day, isn't there? Which I've always found quite annoying for some reason.
Really?
Yeah.
What, to celebrate crimes on the high seas?
Theft and murder on the high seas, yes.
Oh, you're taking that kind of route. You're down on the pirates. Classic square Mike.
The scourge of the British Admiralty.
Listen, the Royal Navy is blessed by God himself. Britannia can never be sunk.
It's funny how much pirates have got a grip on the imagination, especially of children in this country.
That's true. That is true, yes.
Because they are in the pantheon, I think, of dressing up.
Yes.
Very much
so. The pantheon of dressing up.
Yeah. Well, it's pirate, cowboy, robot...
And then animals, miscellaneous.
Animals, miscellaneous. But they're one of those things that perennial for children, for some reason, even though, as the point that Mike always falls back on and, you know, repeatedly makes, which is they were simply common criminals that happened to, you know, have an aqua element to their... Well, they worked within the element of water, the aqua element, didn't they?
They had a lot of accessories. I mean, that's something that was going for them, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I guess, you know, and for dress up as well.
Cutlass.
Your cutlass, your parrot, you know, your eye patch, your wooden leg, your brace of pistols.
So they were kind of built. They were built for fancy dressing. They were fancy dress ready, right from the outset.
Well, which came first? I mean, that's the big question.
Yeah,
really.
You think they might have been conceived at a fancy dress party?
It's possible.
And then became the scourge of the British Navy.
And also, the same goes for mummies, which are the easiest fancy dress because you just need two rolls of decent, sturdy toilet paper, don't you?
Go for 3-ply, I would.
Probably go for 3-ply. Again, which way around did it happen? Did the Egyptians do fancy dress parties for their dead?
And again, accidentally get trapped in a pyramid at the end of a fancy dress party.
Exactly, well, yeah.
Covered in bog roll, discovered again thousands of years later.
It's one of the working theories, isn't it?
Here's something Mike might know. I feel like in this episode, Mike is taking on the mantle as man who knows something, if not very much, about this topic.
Very, which is a perfect kind of sort of provincial dad zone, right?
It's time for Provincial Dad Chat. Who's hit my bloody walking boots?
Darling, have you been relabeling my paraffin and white spirit bottles?
Get your skates on, kids, otherwise we'll miss the inflatable session.
She's taking her mother to see Blood Brothers, which means more Top Gear time for me.
Why would I need to go and see a podiatrist?
Of course I've kept the warranty information, darling.
A tiny bit of knowledge, not necessarily correct knowledge, but then happy to talk a good game. Yeah.
Okay.
And you grew up in Portsmouth, didn't you?
I did, yeah. Naval town.
Which is still the only town that's still effectively run by... It's got a pirate council, hasn't it? So the
it does.
The MP is part of the House of Commons, but the council is run by pirates at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, very much. Yeah, they do all the sort of local amenities and schools, bins.
Ye bins. Yeah. And they still... The way they collect the bins, isn't it, is I've seen the dustbin trucks near you. They've got... a broadside of, I think, 12 cannon, haven't they?
That's right. And they pull up and they raid. They blast the bins.
They absolutely blast the bins.
And if there's any bins left, then they chuck out grappling hooks and they get out and they raid the bins and tear them asunder. Maybe take a couple of bins prisoner.
That's right. And they'll rope those bins together. Those bins will wake up roped together.
Train them up as cabin bins. They may see maybe a tiny food waste bin that they knew once that they see is now being worn around the neck of one of the larger pirates.
But it's something. It's quite a sight, isn't it? When on a Tuesday morning, you'll wake up and be like, oh my God, I've forgotten it's... Avast me, children, I've forgotten it's bin day, and then you have to batten everything. You batten down, you batten down the kitchen, don't you? Batten up the front door.
You're hoisting the recycling.
And then as the dustbin truck pulls up, the 12 cannon are start firing, and then the dustbin men then swarm, and they swarm out of the truck, don't they? And just swarm towards you, and then it's just what you're just daggering them.
You're daggering. They've got I mean they're not supposed to be armed. I mean most of them have got litter pickers in between their teeth. Some of them will have daggers though. Old habits.
Yeah.
Tell me, is the mayor of Portsmouth still a haunted talking skull?
That's right. It's the haunted talking skull of Gráinne O'Malley, the pirate queen. Yeah.
That's right.
She's doing really well for herself.
My question, Mike, was going to be in the public imagination, not just in Britain, but I believe in Hollywood, the pirate tends to be a British man.
From the West Country.
Okay. Yes. With a bit of a West Country burr. Yeah.
Did you get French pirates, Spanish pirates, Dutch pirates?
Ooh. And also, here's the real question is, can you say "arr" with a French accent?
You're the beans francophile. Let's have a go.
So let's find out because therein will lie the answer to your question, Ben.
So Henry, can you translate the following phrase, Henry?
Okay.
Avast me hearties.
On y va, mes coeurs.
I like it. Yeah.
Well, you like it, but it's not sending a chill of terror down your spine, is it? Which is the desired effect.
No, it doesn't. It sounds quite nice. So things can you go
arr.
So
arr.
Oh, there you go. Oh no! So hang on. Yeah, so I need to channel.
Arren Cathedral.
No, I need to channel. So I am one of I think currently three people in the United Kingdom today who can say Ren.
Who are the other two?
Emmanuel Macron when he's over.
Yeah, and Lineker.
And Gary Lineker. But yeah, I can say Ren.
Ren.
So it's basically about channeling. Obviously, you can't say Ren. Most people can't. No problem.
Mike?
Ren.
Lent into it too hard.
Too much, was it? It's just felt a bit like too hard. It might be a little bit. So I couldn't
it's
tell,
too rudder. Yeah, yeah. That's what happens. It's motorboat. That's what happens with Brits. They either go soggy.
They go for vanilla Ren.
They go for vanilla Ren or they go motorboat.
In Pizza Express, there's a pizza. I was about to say there's a poem, and it is like a poem, but it's there's a pizza called La Ren. Again, I can't say it.
La Ren.
It's like ham and mushroom, essentially, but they've called it La Ren.
The Queen, yeah.
That's what it means. Mm. I see.
Of course, Ben, think about it. Ham and mushroom, come on. The ham is the regal quilt, and the mushroom is the jewels on the end of the sceptre. Isn't it?
Which were originally mushrooms when they were before England discovered that there was such a thing as rubies and emeralds and diamonds. We had to make do with toadstools and mushrooms.
That's right.
So that pizza is probably ordered 200,000 times a day in the UK.
I mean, that's in Soho alone, I'd say. Yeah.
And you're saying that probably nobody's getting that right unless Lineker's going in.
Unless Lineker's going in, no one is getting that right.
La Ren.
So you need to start with the R, and you need to sort of hit that Ren, but then snip it off before you get to the end of the city. Yeah.
So it'd be come on, boys. Allons-y. On va piquer tout le trésor.
I don't think there were any French pirates, you know. I think that's what we...
They can't have been French pirates. They literally can't have been.
I don't think there can have been any French pirates. Highwaymen, sure, no problem, but not on the high seas. No. It feels good to have that answered.
Yeah. Great question as well.
In Wales, where I live, as a country, we're quite keen in general to latch on to any smallest hint of celebrity we can. So that manifests itself in a number of ways. One is the sort of over-promotion of anyone with the smallest bit of notoriety. Two is people claiming very, very tenuous links So, for example, people will claim that Bob Marley was Welsh. But there's a bit of pride about the fact that they're the most fearsome pirate of all. Blackbeard, or in Welsh, Barty Lee.
Really? Is that right?
Was a Welshman.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, whose name was Bartholomew Roberts. And yeah, the people are kind of quite, they like it. But I think he was just a very, very, very bad person. Yeah.
What kind of stuff did he get up to?
I think he's very much robbing people and chopping them up kind of guy.
I think he started out as a, working on a slave ship. Bad.
Bad start.
And then moved on to being a pirate after that. And then the only story I remember about him is that when he was killed in some kind of naval skirmish, I think his head was taken off.
That'll do it.
And then his crew were recorded as saying that after his head was taken off, he then jumped into the water and swam clockwise around the boats twice.
Like a chicken, which is exactly what a chicken would do. If you cut a, if you cut a chicken's head off and make it walk the plank, yeah, it'll keep some. So he kept swimming around without his head.
Yeah, as if to go like...
Front crawl?
I don't need it.
Is he trying to create a sort of whirlpool to get the whole boat sunk down? It's ambitious.
And was his head, when his actual head was giving his body directions, wasn't it? His head was shouting, right arm up, left leg down. Right arm, no.
Here's a question. If you were a 17th century pirate and you had your hand chopped off, would you go for a hook? Is that the best choice, really? A hook.
That's a good point, because what can
I would go for highly developed prosthetic hand.
Yeah. But just a sort of steampunk.
So you'd, you'd fast-track that technology.
Yeah.
Okay.
But for that to work, then, at the time, it was even pre-steam, wasn't it? Also, all you'd have is loads and loads of little rats in... It'd have to be rat-powered, wouldn't it? You'd have little rats running in little wheels, each of which would have to have a little string coming off it with
quite
cogs.
Unwieldy.
The amount
sort of Heath Robinson-esque hand.
Yeah, you would need to be dragging behind you an entire second boat behind your main boat just to power that, Ben.
Yeah, but I think it'd be worth it. Because what are you getting? Spatula?
You know what? I know...
Whisk.
You might see this as short-term. A lot of people would say this is short-termist, but I think I would go for one with a really... Just like a really excellent pastrami sandwich on it, which would be... Be short-termist, but in that era, to have access to a really lovely, slightly sweet mustard and some Monterey Jack cheese as well, make it sort of New Yorker sort of
Swiss and rye.
Oh, yeah.
What are you getting, Mike?
Well, I think it depends on the hand. If it's left hand, I can't really use that for anything anyway. So I'd probably just go decorative, put in a...
Wouldn't matter, would it?
Mantelpiece or something, put some souvenirs on it.
Or maybe a little bust of yourself?
A bust of myself, busts of, you know, loved ones that I haven't seen since I got closhed over the back of the head.
Closhed?
Exactly, yeah.
If you get closhed, you wake up and you're a silver service waiter.
It's a very different life entirely. I mean, right hand, that's harder. I don't know.
Was Hook, you know, we know about hooks because of Captain Hook.
Yes.
But was Captain Hook, did they actually have hooks? Or did Captain Hook have a hook? And so now we think of them as having hooks.
I think they did have hooks. I think people even in the last century had hooks.
Well, there's that guy, what's his name? Abu Hamza had a hook.
Yeah, to it.
But he wasn't a pirate. He was a zealot. But
less popular fancy dress option. I said, yeah, what would you... why the hook? I suppose it's good for sort of tearing at people's faces and...
Hanging a pan off.
Hanging a pan off.
If you've got a really nice kind of Le Creuset, something you want to show off, you know?
Yeah, keys to the garden shed, popping open a bottle of lager after a hard day's pillaging.
Yeah. A bit of a worry for the old nighttime scratching, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, itchy arse is a dangerous place to be.
Dangerous game to play.
You'd have to cork
it. Yeah, you'd need to cork it. Well, the arse... One or the other, isn't it? Thanks for listening, everyone.
That was it, gang.
Extra beans.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Please continue supporting. It's much appreciated. And we love you.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Beans out.